Diversity.
Years have caused confusion. I will crush its board.
Well, hello, folks. Developing news today as the Ukraine saga continues. Donald Trump has pulled the plug on the aid. That's the big news. And Keir Starmer is doubling, tripling, and quadrupling down. Despite reality, despite all common sense, Starmer's basically saying that the war can continue. And then on top of that, the British media has today decided to go on an all-out blitz, an all-out blitzkrieg assault on the Vice President, J.D. Vance, for some comments that he didn't really say. And we'll be having a look at both of those things, as well as doing the super thanks and the super chats. But also, this is going to be a shorter stream, more of a... The Goblin Raid. It's going to be because, I don't want this to go much longer than like an hour. I have done three streams this week. Cigar today is a San Cristobal de la Habana, which is quite an obscure cigar. Connoisseur's choice. And if you know anything about your cigars, that's a smaller cigar. It's the name of the size? It's like the Monty Five size. I forgot what that's called now, but smaller than a Petite Corona. All right, so and because I'm just kind of in love with it, I'm going to continue the promo code Mandy sale for one more day, just because I want to see this again. 25% off all courses just for today. And yesterday, I've decided to continue this going because I just kind of like this promo.
A country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Promo code Mandy, 25% off all courses. Come on down, Academic Agency. Every single course, 25% off. Promo code Mandy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
All right, so Trump has shown he means business by actually the official term they've used is pausing US aid. And I can tell you, friends, I have never seen the UK media more insane than it's been in the past week or so. I've talked about this country not having a free press and the press being Pravda. I mean, it is kicked into overgear in the past day or so, to the point where, as far as I can tell, they're flat out manufacturing stories and manufacturing like diplomatic crises where they shouldn't exist. But anyway, let's have a look at some of the headlines here, because Trump has cut US aid. Now, I looked at the four theories last night. And a lot of people, when he did that, said, well, surely this proves Brian Beletic wrong, right? That he's actually cut the aid. Not sure if he'd say that. He'd say, well, this is actually part of the script because they need to sell to the American public that they're not paying for it anymore. So I'm not sure if Beletic is that easily defeated by this bit of news. And the other part of the script, if you remember, according to Beletic, is that the Europeans would keep the war going no matter what. Let's have a little look at the headlines here, because here is the first one. Immediately, I mean, the news came out that Starmer was a little bit kind of taken on the hop by this, and some people were trying to frame it as a Starmer humiliation, that Trump has kind of surprised him because he didn't think it was going this way. He actually believed that the deal was going to be back on, etc. And now he said that the Ukraine can maintain the front line, says PM, after Trump puts military aid on hold. Now, this is a little bit bizarre to me, because how is Ukraine going to continue the war going without American aid? How can it maintain the front line without that aid? That's my question, Keir Starmer. I mean, you and whose army? You and what military, you what material funding? Where are you going to get the money from? I mean, it's not like Downing Street doesn't know every single arms manufacturer in the world. So I'm sure they've been on the blower. But how are they? Like, what is the actual plan? Because we had all that pageantry and all that bullshit over the weekend, you know, when Zelensky came to the London summit and hugged Macron and, you know, Starmer putting a brave face on it. But let's face it, all that was smoke and mirrors. Like, what is this? So then... Next, here's the next headline. This is from The Telegraph. The British peace plan will not be derailed by Trump. The PM is laser focused on getting peace, says Angela Rayner. What? I mean, am I missing something here? It seems to me that Starmer is laser focused on keeping the war going. But of course, in British Pravda, you know, war is peace and freedom is slavery. War is peace and freedom is slavery. And if you think I'm joking, right? I mean, the British peace plan is literally the plan to keep the war going. They're calling it a peace plan. And Politico, who, let's not forget, are recipients of US aid, are calling Keir Starmer the unlikely leader of the quote-unquote free world. You know, that guy who's locking people up for tweets? The guy who called, you know, anybody who was concerned about people being stabbed in the little girls being stabbed in the streets, and he was calling everybody far right a few months ago? Yeah, that dude, he is the unlikely leader of the free world. Remember, war is peace, freedom is slavery. One of my favorite UK Pravda outlets is LBC. Look at this bloody state on them all. Look at the state on them all. And I've actually got let's watch one of these, I thought. And I think this one with Andrew Marr and this dude here calling Trump a Russian asset on the Russia payroll. Let's watch that one.
US and Russia began these sort of peace talks or peace talks. The bombardment has got worse. I just got back from Odessa in the south, which has been whacked by drones. There was a drone flying over my hotel in Kiev. You hear the kind of...
See, this is another part of the narrative that I've never quite got, right? Russia is on the brink of collapse. They're losing the war. But also, if we don't send aid quickly, Ukraine is going to collapse because they're getting shelled every day.
The rattle and the boom of Ukrainian anti-aircraft fire. The Russians really are just bombing big cities all the time. And of course, it's a bit of a ghastly roulette.
They're bombing big cities all the time, but also, according to Zelensky, most of the country is perfectly intact and there's no problems there. Do you remember what he told Vance?
Because someone gets killed every night. These are civilians we're talking about primarily, women, kids, you never know where they're going to land. And so here, people are tired of war, but at the same time, I don't think they want to capitulate or sign up to a sort of Russia-friendly, Trump-brokered peace plan.
It seems to be one of those things that happens in wars. When you get quite close to a possible deal or an armistice or whatever, the fighting actually intensifies during the last period. Is that what we're seeing perhaps today?
I don't think so. I mean, I listened to your discussion with Emily, which is fascinating, but we're not really talking about Putin and what he wants. And there's no evidence that I've seen that Putin wants to stop his
rare bit of reality creeping into the discussion. This is the Durand's talking point. Putin at no point has said he wants a ceasefire, so maybe all of this talk is for the fairies. But anyway.
Goals are as maximalist as ever. He says that territory which he doesn't control belongs to Russia. And I think he's just sort of sending a message both to Kiev, of course, but also to Washington that he's in control of the situation. So this is why the Ukrainians are so skeptical, that they don't think They don't trust Putin, understandably. Mm. They don't believe in ceasefire.
Of course not, yes.
But as soon as it's signed, it's going to be violated. And this is why everything goes back.
Can I just ask a question? Who goes to a war zone and wears that kind of handkerchief thing around his neck? What sort of character goes, all right, I'm going to go to a war-torn country and ponce about with this around my neck?
Security guarantees, and why I think Zelensky is, you know, really uninfused by the American plan, if you can call it that.
Well, I do want to come on to Trump and Putin. It's been suggested to me that Trump and Putin were speaking on the phone a couple of days before that disastrous moment in the White House from Zelensky's point of view. And Putin may well have been saying to him, do you know what?
People asking about why Andrew Marr is always, he had a stroke, guys, so his face is always a bit like that. So, you know, a bit like JR from wrestling, you know. So we shouldn't make fun of that.
I would love to do a peace deal with you, Donald, but it's that sodding Zelensky that's the problem. He's the really bad man. He's the madman. And if Vance is listening in on the call, then that might go a long way to explaining what happened in the Oval Office.
Yeah, I think that's right. I mean, Andrew, look, we can look at this in different ways. We can say that Trump is a Russian asset or an Asian influence, or to use Lenin's famous phrase, a useful idiot. It doesn't really matter. The point is that
Listen to this madness, right? Trump is a Russian asset and a stooge or a useful idiot simply because he's willing to talk to the Russians. A very good insight into this was a debate that took place between John Mearsheimer, the godfather of international realism, and Alexander Dugin, right? The Russian professor who is meant to be somewhat influential in Russia. And one of the things that Mearsheimer talked about, and Dugin talked about it as well, is that in realism, right, in realism, you have to be able to embody, right, the other. This is actually something that William Shakespeare was good at, believe it or not, right? They used to call it, it was something they did in classical rhetoric, which I talk about in Foundations of Rhetoric, and I talk about this in Foundations of Shakespeare as well. They called it classical imitatio, right? Can you step inside the shoes of your opponent and make honest arguments from their point of view, okay? And Shakespeare was one of the all-time masters of this. But realism relies on understanding your enemy from the inside and out. So you understand strategy from their point of view, and that means that you're able to come up with your playbook to either counter their strategy or to think about, you know, what they're doing and to anticipate their moves. What Mearsheimer and Dugin, but what Mearsheimer mainly was saying in that, it's kind of a debate talk, whatever, but it was interesting to watch. What Mearsheimer was saying was that from 1991 onwards, from the unipolar moment onwards, the West got into this kind of mentality where nobody else matters. Nobody else's point of view actually matters. The only point of view that matters is ours. And our point of view is liberal democracy is the answer. All other countries secretly want liberal democracy. Anybody who says otherwise is Hitler, right, or an awful dictator, and therefore nothing they have to say possibly matters. nothing that everything they say is, you know, should be blocked out, not listened to, right? And instead, we get to impose our vision on everybody else, which means that you don't negotiate, you don't listen, you don't attend diplomacy, you don't talk. Other countries like Russia don't have interests. They don't have legitimate concerns. They're not legitimate governments. The only legitimacy and the sole actor is us, okay, in the West. Dugin actually describes a situation where he went. Do you remember there was that geopolitical thinker? He wrote a book called "The Great Chess," the Great Chess Game, or the Great Chess Match. You know, he's like a kind of you know, he's in that line of geopolitics from Mackinder onwards. He's got like a Russian name. I forget his name now. Dugin says he went to meet him in the 90s and sat down in front of a chessboard. Okay. So it was him and, that's it. Brzezinski, the grand chessboard. And Dugin describes sitting at this chessboard with Brzezinski, right? And, Brzezinski telling him, listen, there are not two players in a game of chess. There is only one player in the game of chess. You're not playing your opponent. You simply play your own game, okay? And this Brzezinski is very central to the American unipolar moment and the way the West has thought, right, up until Trump coming in the past couple of weeks. This is mental. It's a kind of crazy way to carry on. Because in this frame, where there's only one player in the chess game, anybody even contemplating acknowledging that there's another player sitting across from you is automatically a Russian asset or a stooge or paid off or a sympathizer or a collaborator. This is no way to carry on diplomatic relations or international relations. It is frankly madness. And another person who's been very good on this topic over the months and years at this point is Alistair Crook. He has talked about how in foreign policy, it's like a mirror of the woke cancel culture. Okay, woke culture, cancel culture was not able to acknowledge that anybody else had a valid point of view. Right, if you try to challenge the woke, you are automatically a fascist, a Nazi, a racist, a sexist, a reactionary, an evil conservative, and all of the other names that all of us have been called for the past 5 years. Okay, but Crook's insight is, so it was with domestic policy as it was with international relations. Okay, basically, there's no, like, you don't get to have a say because you're automatically a Nazi and we will simply cancel you. Okay. The trouble is, you can't just fire or cancel Russia. Now, Trump, okay, is basically trying to change this. He is trying to say, look, Russia may even be our rival or adversary. Okay, they may be another great power. They're traditionally enemies of ours, but we have to have a diplomatic relationship. And we have to acknowledge that Russia has things it wants to do independently of us. And that there's only so much that we as America can do about that. And I want to put America first. So putting America first means we don't have to bankroll all of this stuff. Okay. But this way of thinking is completely alien to these people that were watching on our screen here. They can't accept any other frame beyond it is our way or you get cancelled. That is the only thing allowed. It's incredibly brittle. And in fact, it is totalitarian. It is the definition of totalitarianism, liberal democratic totalitarianism. And, you know, this is a thing we've been living under for quite a long time now. Well, here they are accusing Trump of being a Russian asset.
Is pro-Russian. And we know this because of what he does and what he says. He just endlessly repeats Kremlin talking points. We've already moved on from the fact that a week ago he called Volodymyr Zelensky a dictator. said he had 4% approval rating, which is an invented figure, I think possibly from Russians, that he was doing a terrible job and so on. And it's just been this extraordinary kind of victim blaming from him and his administration that there is a close relationship between Trump and Moscow going back to 1987 when he first visited at the behest of... Well,
you take me exactly where I want to end up with you, Luke, because I know that you studied in...
Now there is, I did try to look into this, right? Is there any connection between Trump, Netanyahu and Putin? And there is. There's something called the Chabad. And I listened to a whole stream with a guy who had quite a heavy dope, like a guy who has a very heavy kind of anti-Trump, anti-Russian bias. It was on Odyssey. It was a guy called Adam Green. I don't usually listen to him. I don't know much about him. But I just wanted, I was trying to find out, and this stream came up. So I listened to it last night. There are some connections between Trump and Russia going back to the 80s. Okay. He's had business dealings there. Whether that means he's on the KGB payroll or that he is a Russian asset, I was less convinced by, and I watched the entire stream where he laid out all of the stuff. The trouble is, part of his evidence are books written in the height of Russiagate, right? This guy that Adam Green had on. And he was arguing that, look, Russiagate and all of this stuff is a way of, in his view, Israel washing, right? Israel washing the question, to pin it all on Russia so that Americans don't look at the connection between Russia and Israel, okay? If you want to have a look at that stuff, I was thinking, is there anything here, though? There's a lot of, like... So I was not that convinced by it. But if you... Adam Green's last stream goes into the Trump-Russia connection in incredible detail, and it goes into the connection between Israel and Russia and Putin and Netanyahu, okay? There is something, right? I'm not going to say it's nothing, but... Also, I'm not convinced, really, that it explains the whole thing. I'm not convinced that you can explain away Trump's entire career as being like someone who was groomed by the Kremlin from the 1980s, which is the narrative a lot of these people actually believe.
Some detail, Trump's first visits to Moscow, his first contacts with Moscow, back in the Gorbachev days and since then.
On the Chabad connection, the story is that when Putin kicked out the oligarchs, he only kicked some of them out, and the others, like the Jewish community within Russia, have been taken over by this group called the Chabad, or some sect called the Chabad, which are like Orthodox Hasidic Jews. But I was looking into that, and I saw that Putin had denounced them as a cult like 2 years ago. So I take a lot of this stuff with a grain of salt. I've never quite, like, you know, and I spent quite a long time seeing, like, what is the connection between Israel and Russia? And it's a long and difficult history where they've been friends at some times, then they've been enemies at some times. And this goes all the way back to Stalin. Stalin actually helped establish Israel in the first place. The Soviet Union was one of the first countries to recognize Israel, but then he turned on them pretty quickly within the space of like a year or two. And Russian-Israeli relations have been a long history of we're friendly for a bit, now we're against each other. We're friendly for a bit, now we're against each other. One thing I will say in the history of Russian-Israeli relations is that Putin and Netanyahu have always been much friendlier than Putin and the other parties, okay? And also Netanyahu and other Russian politicians have had frostier relations. So there's a long history of other politicians saying stuff to piss off, like Israelis saying stuff to piss off Russians, or Russians saying stuff to piss off Israelis, and then Putin and Netanyahu being the two to smooth things over. Okay, so there is a friendship between Putin and Netanyahu. Notably, Israel did not condemn Russia or take part in any of the sanctions or any of the UN stuff against it. And also, Putin has maintained for a long time that Israel is part of the Russian diaspora, that Israel is actually a Russian country because there are so many Russians living there. Okay, so there is something. Okay, at the same time, lots of Israelis say, well, hold on a second, if he's such a great friend to this country, why does he prop up the Iranians, our greatest enemies? Okay, why in Syria was he on the other side? All stuff like this. So it's complicated, right? It's complicated, as geopolitics often is. Okay, so I don't think you can just sell this simple story of, yeah, Netanyahu, Trump, and Putin go back a long way, and they're all in league with each other as some part of Russian-Israeli plot to take over the world, which is the narrative that dude on Adam Green was talking about. But anyway, let's carry on.
Some, do you think there is a case to be made that he has been in some sort of way won over or recruited by the Russians a long time ago?
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of compelling circumstantial evidence. I mean, to find out definitively, we would need the collapse of the Putin regime. We'd need to go rummaging around the basement of the Lubyanka, home of the KGB now, the FSB. But what I've heard
see
from my
you there.
Is, yeah, well, we can go together, Andrew, you and I. But really, it's a very long...
Listen to the fantasy of these people. They're fantasizing about the Putin regime collapsing so they can go rummaging around the KGB offices to find the paperwork to prove that Trump is an asset of Putin's. Like, that exchange just happened on national radio.
Backstory. And those who dismiss it and say it's all a hoax, why is Trump the most pro-Russian president in American history? How does one explain this? I mean, you can say it's because he admires strongmen, or he likes money, or you can say, actually, on top of that, he's been compromised.
See, this is mental, right? On the barometer that he's laid out, Trump is the most pro-Russian president in American history. By this barometer, JFK is pro-Russian, okay? Because JFK managed the Cuban Missile Crisis and got on the blower with the Kremlin, right? This is the barometer we're dealing with. These people are mental. Because the American president has deigned to have diplomatic relations with the Russians and is trying to end the crisis, he's the most pro-Russian president of all time. During the Cold War, Washington and the Kremlin were constantly in contact, the White House and the Kremlin. What is this? Oh, it's crazy. It really is. It's crazy. There's more. Though, friends, because we're going to stick with LBC, because the British media has also decided that it's going to go, not just the British media, all the MPs too, as we're about to find out, have gone on all out assault against JD Vance today. So let's watch this.
Americans' economic upside in the future of Ukraine. That is a way better security guarantee than 20,000 troops from some random country that hasn't fought a war in 30 or 40 years.
Wow. A vice president who is as dumb as he's aggressive. That takes some doing because, Mr. Vice President, that's some random country that's not fought a war. That would be the United Kingdom, who stood alongside your troops in Iraq, not once but twice, and in Afghanistan.
Now the trouble is, if you listen to what Van said again, he didn't talk about the UK. Listen to his comment again to Hannity. In fact, I've got the full clip. Let me pull the full clip of Vance on Hannity. And the British media have basically taken this as him talking about Britain.
Is Zelensky, when he says it's going to go on for years, how many more lives are going to be lost? He's not going to have a country to save
exactly
at the end
right.
of that. The minerals deal would have provided the monies to rebuild their country and a strong U.S. presence and maybe European
yes.
troops
well,
as well.
And this is an important part of it. The president knows that, look, if you want real security guarantees, if you want to actually ensure that Vladimir Putin does not invade Ukraine again, the very best security guarantee is to give Americans economic upside in the future of Ukraine. That is a way better security guarantee than 20,000 troops from some random country that hasn't fought a war in 30 or 40 years. Mm. The security guarantee and also the economic guarantee for Ukraine is to rebuild the country and ensure that America has a long-term interest. You're not going to do that if you come to the Oval Office, insult the president, and refuse to follow his plan for...
Now, I don't know why the British media have taken this to mean that he must have been talking about Britain, okay? And Vance has actually made a tweet basically saying, like, look, I wasn't talking about Britain. What the fuck are you guys on about? But that hasn't stopped the media using this as an all-out excuse, basically. So here is Vance. Let me just, in the interest of fairness, I'm going to show what Vance has said. This is absurdly dishonest. I didn't even mention the UK or France in the clip, both of whom have fought bravely alongside the US over the last 20 years and beyond. Okay. Hasn't stopped every single outlet running with a story, okay, across the entire political gamut. Okay. In our media, the quote unquote furthest right media outlet is GB News. GB News have run with a story, JD Vance branded deeply disrespectful after dismissing Britain as a random country that hasn't fought for 40 years, despite the Afghan employment, okay? The Express, right? The Express. Keir Starmer slaps down JD Vance after US Vice President's British troops insult. Now, the thing is, the problem with this is that no aspect of this story is true. As you just saw, Vance didn't insult British troops. And secondly, Keir Starmer didn't slap down JD Vance, right? If you read what Starmer said, he didn't name Vance. He just said, our troops have fought valiantly, you know, in Iraq and Afghanistan and all the other conflicts, and Kosovo, et cetera, et cetera. He didn't actually name Vance in the, you know, so there was no quote unquote slapdown. So the media is actually manufacturing a crisis here. They're manufacturing this, okay? Now, every single outlet has gone with this. BBC has gone with it. Huffington Post, which is like a really kind of scummy left-wing source. Daily Mail. Oh my God, the Daily Mail. That's gone with it as well. Look, veteran backlash at shameful JD Vance after he dismisses Britain as a random country that hasn't fought a war in 30 years, even though hundreds of UK troops died in Iraq and Afghanistan. Here's Sky News. JD Vance hits back after being told to wind his neck in a row over British troops, right? And the Huffington Post actually ran a story which they said, oh, look, if Vance didn't mean Britain, what's he on about? Because only Britain and France have said that they're the only two countries who've said that they would send troops, right? So he must have meant Britain, because Britain is the only country who'd said they put boots on the ground. Ha, caught you out, JD, okay? This is the level that our media has got to now. Let me read this article from The Guardian, because you have to see what they're doing with this story. Okay, I'm going to read it in full. The Shadow Defence Secretary and other MPs have reacted with fury after JD Vance appeared to describe a proposed Anglo-French peace deployment to Ukraine as 20,000 troops from some random country that has not fought a war in 30 or 40 years. It comes after Downing Street and Keir Starmer have spoken to Donald Trump on Monday night, part of continued UK efforts to try to patch up a faltering peace plan for Ukraine. During an interview with Fox News, Vance, the increasingly outspoken US vice president, was scathing about the idea of other countries being able to give meaningful security guarantees after any peace. A proposed minerals agreement would give the US more economic interest in Ukraine and thus provide a way better security guarantee than 20,000 troops from a random country that has not fought a war in 30 or 40 years, Vance said. While UK politicians are largely united in agreeing that a US military presence in some form will be necessary in any peace deal. There was immediate outrage about Vance's apparent dismissal of a UK military that fought alongside American troops in Iraq and Afghanistan. James Cartledge, James Cartledge, the US, probably the only bit of actual backbone that any of the Tories have. James Cartledge says the Conservative Shadow Defence Secretary said, Britain and France came to the US's aid, deploying thousands of personnel to Afghanistan, including my own brother and numerous parliamentary colleagues, past and present. It's deeply disrespectful to ignore such service and sacrifice. On Tuesday, Vance said it was absurdly dishonest to argue that he had been referring to UK or France, despite the countries being at the forefront of efforts to provide a non-US peacekeeping force. I didn't even mention the UK or France in the clip, both of whom have fought bravely alongside the US over the past 20 years and beyond, he tweeted. But let's be direct. There are many countries who are volunteering, privately or publicly, support that have neither the battlefield experience nor the military equipment to do anything meaningful. Asked about Vance's initial comments, Starmer's official spokesperson did not directly address them, but reiterated the fact that the UK forces have recently fought alongside their American patriots. The Prime Minister and I... Let me just skip this comment from the spokesperson because it's all twaddle. Johnny Mercer, the Conservative former Armed Forces Minister, who is no longer an MP, called Vance a clown. Mercer, who served in Afghanistan as an army officer, said, I read J.D. Vance's book, making the mistake of finding him quite interesting. My own admission, he spent his time in the Marines, writing articles and taking pictures. Perhaps if he had got his hands dirty, serving his country like so many of his fellow American and British veterans, chasing his country's own foreign policy ideas, he might not be so quick to dismiss their sacrifice. Ben Obese Jekdi, a Conservative MP, as an army officer, served in Afghanistan and Iraq. He noted that in his memoir, Vance said he was lucky to escape any real fighting when in the Marines. He went on, I was part of the British forces fighting in highly kinetic operations in Iraq and Afghanistan, the latter in response to Article 5 following 9/11. The disrespect shown by the new US Vice President to the sacrifices of our service personnel is unacceptable. Liberal Democrats said Peter Mandelson, the UK ambassador to Washington, should seek an apology from Vance. The party's defence spokesperson, Helen Maguire, who, as a Royal Military Police officer, served in Iraq, said, I saw firsthand how American and British soldiers fought bravely together, shoulder and shoulder. Six of my own regiment, the Royal Military Police, did not return home from Afghanistan. This is a sinister attempt to deny that reality. Okay? This is the entire British establishment fabricating a story basically out of nothing. It's an all-out assault on J.D. Vance, okay? You've got to understand, if Americans are watching, you have to understand something here. This is blanket, right? That was from The Guardian, our left-wing newspaper. All of the people they were quoting were conservatives from the quote-unquote Tories or the right side of this. It's the GB News, Express, Mail, Guardian, Huff Post, The Independent, The Times, the BBC. Right, that is basically the entire spectrum of the media, left to right, talking in unison against J.D. Vance. Okay, what that means is that whether you're left leaning, right leaning, liberal, conservative, doesn't really matter. The narrative that you'll have seen today is that J.D. Vance had a go at the military, which is basically sacred, right? And I had a little look at the Tory boys. They are predictably frothing at the mouth, all out anti-Vance from the Tories, right? From the Tory boys. This is a pretty bad situation for Vance, I would say, because even though this story is not true, lots of those people aren't going to forget the idea that Vance attacked the British military. So quite what they want to get out of this. Why are they doing this? I don't know. But it seems like they're getting everybody riled up, right? With anti-Trump and anti-Vance and even some anti-American sentiment, right? All out, you know, viva Ukraine, all out pro-Zelensky, and all out Starmer saying he's going to keep the war going. I don't really know where they're going with this. I don't understand exactly the dynamics. If Beletic is right, this is some, I mean, there's kayfabe and there's kayfabe. This is like something I've never seen before in my life. It is mental. Absolutely mental. And I'm telling you, I'm watching my own timeline, and this stuff has cut through, right? I even saw some fellow travelers on our side of things on the internet getting upset at Vance because the military was attacked, right? So what I'm saying is people who are adjacent to GB News, people who are even adjacent to me, are actually like, I mean, they're falling for this. This stuff is working. It's not just the British public who are on board with this. It's starting to get like our guys too. I don't know where this is going. I really don't. Increasingly, people saying things like I am are getting, you know, I'm a very lonely voice here. Almost nobody is talking out against this in our media space. So there we are. It's mental. You see, Edgewalker's saying it's the entire Euro regime who are delusional, not just the UKAA. And unfortunately, Edgewalker, that's just not true. Okay, the Germans aren't up for this. The Italians, Maloney, isn't really up for this. The Poles have ruled out committing troops to the ground. Even the Poles, who hate the Russians, have ruled this out. Macron, Starmer's trying to bring him along, but Macron was like, I've got this idea for a month-long peace. And Starmer was like, what? How dare you? Take those words out of your mouth. We will never surrender. I know surrendering is in the blood of you. You surrendering monkey French frog twat. We will never surrender. The UK is the most insane. I don't care what you say. The French are not as mad. The Germans are not as bad. The Italians are not as bad. Okay. The only countries that are perhaps as kind of crazy are ones where it's more understandable. Right, some of the people in the Scandinations, well, they're quite close to Russia, so I can understand them being a bit more on alert. You know, let's not forget, from their point of view, it's like, well, we're close to bordering with Russia here, and they did invade their neighbor, so they need to. But other than them, the British establishment and Starmer are by far. The most insane. You also have to understand that there's no dissenting voice anywhere in the media, left or right. Peter Hitchens, maybe. That's about it. It's crazy. George Galloway and Peter Hitchens are the only kind of even vaguely mainstream figures talking out against this. It's kind of crazy. It really is mental. The thing is, I don't know what their plan is beyond bluster. And at some point, reality has to come crashing down on all of this. The other thing you've got to understand is that, you know, all of us who pay attention and aren't drawn in by, media nonsense and narratives and so on, we know that Russia's basically won the war, okay? We know that regardless of what is said, Russia's won. In the British media narrative spin, it's Ukraine who are on the brink of winning the war, and Russia, who've suffered almost a million casualties, okay? Russia is on the brink of collapse. 2 more weeks, and the Russian economy may go under, right? These are the narratives that are perpetuated in the British press, in the British media. And I think the elites believe it. I think the likes of Keir Starmer and MI6 and all that believe this. So they're acting like their basis for action and decision making is founded on an alternative reality, a reality that does not actually accord with what is happening or what has happened. This is a major problem. This is a major problem. Our leaders are making decisions based on fake news. And I don't know what to do, say, or anything. And I feel like, I mean, maybe this is just the power of the media, right? But I feel like I'm living in the Truman Show. And I feel like those of us who see through this are actually in a very small minority. When I say small minority, I'd say upwards of 80%, maybe even 85% of people are all in on this. Tell me I'm wrong. That's what it feels like. Whether it's true or not, I don't know. I don't see any Ukrainian flags anymore. So there's that. I don't see many people out in the streets protesting, etc. But the perception, remember, a soft managerial regime of perception management. The perception is, or the, what I perceive, is that most people, vast majority of people, are for this. Which actually means there's a moral unity between Keir Starmer and the public on this issue. A manufactured consensus deliberately engineered by British media. Both sides, Tories and Labour, Lib Dems, even Reform UK, all in on this. And I find it a little it's disconcerting. Because at some points you think, hold on, right? Maybe I'm just mad, and everybody else, you know, sees clearly. But that just isn't true. It's just not true. I know they're lying. So I don't know. Maybe in these times we have to keep each other sane, friends, because this is crazy. It really is. Really is. All right, let's hit some super chats and then we'll get out of here. Let's get out of here. So I'll do super thanks first and then I'll do the super chats. There's been quite a lot of super thanks this week, I seem to recall. So let's hit those. Tim Cornish, 7 days ago. No, you get out. No, you get out, Tim Cornish. Ken's a culture says, Douglas Murray is as credible as his faux posh accent. He's the posh shill to Tommy Robinson's. I don't think there's anything faux about Douglas Murray's accent. I think he genuinely is that kind of posh and feline. Very feline, isn't he? Feline. Int Boom says, where did nuclear war go? Why are there people even considering talking about ground wars? I don't know. And every once in a while, you know what was really disconcerting about the Mearsheimer-Dugin debate? There was a sticking point where Mearsheimer was like, oh, yeah, realistically, Russia aren't going to use nuclear weapons. And Dugin was like, what? Putin is serious, and why do you think he wouldn't use them? We would absolutely use them. And Mearsheimer didn't have an answer to that. And I was like, fucking hell. Do we even know who we're dealing with here? And this is what worries me. It really does worry me. Because Putin has shown more than once that he is not fucking around. But does Keir Starmer know that? And if he does, what the hell is he doing? We don't have the power to fight this war. This is mental. I just don't get it. Captain Smith says, this was on last week's Office Hour, Trump becoming a civ leader would be a total Gamergate victory. Yeah, it would. Trump becoming a leader. I mean, Trump DLC for Civ 8, I'm calling it now. If there is a Civ 8, if civilization makes it to Civ 8, right? Because some people may want to blow up the world before then. 56 Gaff says, your analysis and content, including back catalogue and courses, are excellent. Thank you. From here in Canada, it appears desperate and pathetic, like some kids who can't do enough to be cool and relevant. Did the Americans take the training wheels off the bike too soon? Might they try to constrain the belligerent Brits at all? Or do they wait and see how they can take advantage of whatever it is that comes of this? It does seem to create the chance for public humiliation for the UK. Sad. Oh, I mean, the thing is that some things are becoming pretty obvious now, right? You're in Canada, right? Did you see this headline? Every day there's something more crazy coming out of these people, right? Did you see this one? This one here. Let me just share this with you. New. British nuclear weapons can help protect Canada against Trump. Liberal Party leader Chrystia Freeland, running to replace leftist Justin Trudeau, has said. Let me just read that again. Somebody in frontline mainstream Canadian politics literally suggested that Britain install nukes in Canada to protect Canada against America. These people live in a fantasy land. They live in fantasy land. And if that woman knew her history as I do, if she'd watched Adam Curtis's Ocean Apart, the documentary series that I reviewed here on this channel, especially those episodes covering the Thatcher years, she would know that Margaret Thatcher gave away British nuclear sovereignty when she turned this country into Airstrip One and made it so that Britain cannot actually fire its nukes without the Americans green lighting it. We don't have the ability to deploy nukes to America to use on America because there's an American security control on there, signed up by Margaret Thatcher in the 80s. Now, the fact that she didn't know that, or the fact that she suggested it despite that being the case, should be deeply embarrassing for everybody involved in the, Canadian Liberal Party. But of course, you guys have had Justin Trudeau as your leader for a decade now. And the world keeps on turning. Marcus Aurelius, I mean, are you seriously suggesting, like people in the chat saying, oh, you know, it's not true, etc. Are you seriously suggesting that that Britain could, give Canada nukes as a hedge against America? Maybe I am living in the Truman Show. Maybe everything that's happening is just designed, like, you know, secretly everybody's just laughing somewhere. It's just like the entire world is just a trick to test my sanity. What the fuck are people talking about? Just. Marcus Aurelius says, I tried leaving this on your Adam Curtis stream on World War II, but there was no option. Oddly, it was my old Southern grandfather and not my British relations that indoctrinated me in my youth of the virtues of the empire, particularly in India. I came across a book entitled Raj, The Making and Unmaking of British India by Lawrence James that I would highly recommend as a comprehensive history of the empire in India. Cheers from a few of us whose long history in America has not made us forget the roots from which we have sprung. And that was on an old video called Who Really Gave Away the British Empire, which is where I read Major General Richard Hilton, which I'd recommend that video if you haven't watched it. Well, thank you very much for that, Marcus. Total Yankee Defenestration says, US support of Russia makes a lot more sense when you realize that many Russians and American oligarchs share that ethno-religious background. Trump just loves entrepreneurship. There is a connection, as I mentioned, between Trump, Putin, and Netanyahu. But I don't think it should be overplayed, personally, having looked at the evidence last night. I was considering making a video on it, but then I thought there's not enough here, really. Samsa Bourne says, why on earth, at any point, would you have said that J.K. Rowling is a friend? Back in 2022, apparently. Genuine question, not having a go. I don't remember, of course, saying J.K. Rowling was a friend. All I said was, that was on Cigar Stream, What Israel Has Revealed. All I said was is that it looked like J.K. Rowling was an ally in the fight on the trans issue, right? But then when you looked into it, she and all of the other anti-Trune activists have one thing in common, which is the same thing as Libs of TikTok, Graham Linehan, and many other people who made their name, let's say, in the culture wars on the Trune issue. Jordan Peterson's another one. They've all got one other thing in common, which is a particular love of one country in the Middle East. That's what I was saying. And that wasn't that obvious back before 10/7. That is what Israel revealed. Okay? It wasn't as obvious as that before then. Bogstomper says, AA, have you seen that Trump was personally invited to Balmoral by the king? Now, have you ever heard of the Balmoral test with the royals? Diana and Thatcher took the test. Thatcher failed because she refused to hunt. Would this potentially be a sign that the Donald will take on the Balmoral challenge and then defeat the king? I cannot imagine any scenario, right? I cannot imagine any scenario where Trump would turn down the Balmoral challenge. Trump is exactly the sort of guy who'd be like, yeah, fuck yeah, I'm out for hunting. I'm gonna defeat you, king. I can just imagine him shit-talking King Charles. Then again, the royals are pretty good at hunting, so my money would probably be on Charles. My money would probably be on Charles. If it was a golf match, my money would be on Trump, but I reckon the king would have Charles in the Balmoral test, to be honest. I think Trump would love it. Trump fucking loves that. Trump is a kind of archetypical competitive jock type. He fucking loves that shit. Isaac Young says, you must be in a very jubilant mood in order to forget to tell us to get out these last two streams. I only wish that Trump would have asked Zelensky to give the back the money he wasted on coke. Well, thank you very much for that, Isaac Young. CGT says, thanks. Well, thank you very much, CGT. Carl says, this is on my video, The Return of Great Power Politics, from yesterday. This is comment is meant for the Dark Synth video, as AA Culture does not have super thanks. Excellent video, AA. Happy to have a few more artists to add to my brooding drive home, where I try to resist speeding dangerously. Do you want to know something, Carl, right? This will make you laugh. When I was driving back to Wales, I put on my Dark Synth playlist, right? Because I was prepping for that video for a few weeks. Put on my Dark Synth playlist. When I got back from Wales, I had a letter waiting for me. It was a speeding ticket. So you, sir, went 82 miles an hour down the M4 at, 11 o'clock on this date. We're going to prosecute you Or you can do the really annoying speeding test thing, the safety driving course again. You know, I've done that thing about three times now. And last time I did it, it was during COVID. So we did it via like a Zoom call, and it was run by this black woman. And I'm not kidding you now. She spent the entire time talking about getting a KFC. I'm not even making that up. In fact, I probably told that story at the time so people can go back and verify it. God knows. I'm at the point now where I might just say, like, I took the points off my license. Just fuck off. Who cares if I went that 82 miles an hour down an empty motorway? Anyway, yeah. So be careful of Dark Synth. It does actually make you speed. Because you get into the, like, you listen to the music. And especially when it's dark. You're like, I'm Knight Rider. I'm Knight Rider. I'm Johnson. I'm going rogue. Ike Brovosky says, theory number six is bogging Russia down in Ukraine is necessary in order to overthrow Assad. Look at the latest territorial gains in Syria. Yeah, that's also true. That's also true. And let's face it, they weren't able to prop up Assad anymore. Although a lot of that was on Assad, as we found out later on. I mean, to be fair, the speed limit is 70, not 80. So, you know, I think it's harsh to get a speeding ticket for going 82 miles an hour, though, don't you? I think it's pretty harsh. Okay. Untread, son of Untread, says, if Arthur, this is on Reform UK, need to take more risks from earlier today. If Arthur keeps refusing to pull the sword, then he isn't Arthur. From UKIP to Brexit Party to now, he has had countless chances. Remember, he is proud that he killed the BNP, which means he is anti-Bowden. Farage is not the man. Elliot Vale says, hi, AA. In your octopus model, I note there is not a component such as the engine or boiler room. Does that imply that capturing the means of energy generation does not lead to a viable rival castle? Or is it a subcomponent of one of the other tentacles? Many thanks for all that you do. Well, Elliot Vale, if you remember, there is the chest, which is like the heart of the octopus, the chest. So the chest is the engine, the money supply. The money supply goes back to the Federal Reserve, the banking system, and the money. Show me the money. So, yeah, the octopus model is predicated on the flow of funds, just like USA, yeah? There we go. Oh, my God. It really is getting bad now. It's getting bad because MPs are starting to talk like this. Graham Stewart, MP, we have to consider the possibility that President Trump is a Russian asset. If so, Trump's acquisition is the crowning achievement of Putin's FSB career, and Europe is on its own. Who is Graham Stewart, MP? He is obviously from the Tory party because he is quoting Based Kemi. So the Tory party are speaking in these sorts of terms now. You see, there's no Labour, like the Uniparty is real. They're 100% with Keir Starmer, 110% with Keir Starmer. So there we are. A couple of super chats. Christian Troy says, Pete Quinones has gone into detail as to why Victoria Nuland and Robert Kagan have such a deep hatred of the Russians. Yes, and I'm sure he's right on that. I have no reason to doubt Pete on such details. He's good at those deep dives. Rito Hanna says, how can Europe remilitarize while being run by such unserious people? Something tells me that if they try to, it will be their undoing. Well, fingers crossed. Seamus O'Blaine says, I bet Mandy's lips have sweetened many a negotiation. Oh, my God.
A country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
just incredible. The Lion says, where does the City of London land in your geopolitical analysis? Is it just a pure schizo theory, or do they secretly run the gay or some other faction? Well, I think what has been revealed, I think, in a way that is undeniable, is that London and the American Democrat Party are very closely intertwined. That's why Starmer sent people out to a campaign against Trump. The British establishment is all in on the gay. There's no doubt about that. And now that Trump is trying to stop this neoliberal world order, they are moving the center. They're trying to move the center back to London, aren't they? They're trying to make Starmer the new leader of the globalists. So it's obvious to me that London is, you know, globalist central, basically. Everybody likes to point to Davos and the WEF and so on. It's obvious that London is very very central to the gay, which probably goes right back to its establishment back in the days of a certain Winston Churchill. And there is some good stuff on this. I've got a book that I mentioned the other day, Britain's Empires by James Hartfield. And the whole last quarter of that is about what the empire without the empire, I'll put it that way, the soft power empire. I've now got another book here by Tom Stevenson called Someone Else's Empire, which is about the kind of British strategy of trying to influence Washington. The thing is that the more I've looked into these things, let me give you a good example, right? When I remember looking into Iraq and all during the Iraq war stuff, the narrative that was often played here was that Blair was being George W. Bush's poodle, right? That was the kind of, and if you remember in Notting Hill, there was that moment where Hugh Grant / Tony Blair stands up to the American president and gets a standing ovation and all of that, okay? This was shit-lived fantasy, though. And the reality is that Blair was a harder core neocon than anyone around George Bush, and that Blair talked Bush into doing all sorts of things that even Bush wasn't really up for, okay? People who talk about this, Christopher Hitchens, has got an essay called Tony Blair Neocon. I remember being at the Oxford Union, and remember the weapons inspector, Hans Blix, right, who'd been very close to this. He was the weapons inspector who went to Iraq and was tasked to find WMDs there. I remember Hans Blix saying back then in 2005 or whatever that Blair basically was the one who was kind of instrumental in making Iraq happen, making Afghanistan happen, making Kosovo happen back in the Bill Clinton days as well. He is, very warmongery. I'll just put it that way. Very warmongery. And, now you could say, well, this is a strategy of being more so if you have an empire, you've got the core, and then you've got all of the other vassals of which Britain is a vassal of America. And there is a way of being more loyal to the core, the vassal being more loyal to the core. You see a little bit of this in stuff like the British Raj, right? Where you've got Raj loyalists, Indian Raj loyalists, who are more British, or try to be more British than the British themselves, okay? And this could be one way of explaining the behavior of Tony Blair, to try to get ahead, to try to sniff where Washington is going, and then be even more of that, even more American than the Americans are, okay? That's one way of explaining it. Another way of explaining it is to say, actually, this has always been kind of their plan, to try to backseat drive what America does from London. How much of that is British cope and how much is reality, I don't know. So that's my read on London. Padfoot says, the UK's media lockstep fanaticism on this conflict reveals its creeping, panicking fear. To know your enemy is to understand what they fear the most. Blackadder Fran says, if Putin has won, why is he not opening talks? Well, Blackadder Fran, the thing is that if you're in the driving seat, right, if you're in the driving seat of a conflict, why would you end it? Why wouldn't you just say, well, I can just continue this war to the bitter end? I can just win on the battlefield. I don't need to name any terms. I don't need to come to the table. I can just win the war. Simple. And that is what the Duran have maintained. That's why Putin's not even up for the ceasefire, which is the elephant in the room. Leonard says, American left has no foreign enemies. It has domestic enemies that project onto foreign nations. Sloppy Joe Stalin says, AA, would you check out the WWYD 1980s tournament I'm running on X? The polls at and then sports. There are some shenanigans almost banned Jennifer Connelly, but she won a wild card round to earn entry. Okay, I will have a look. I mean, is this an outlaw territory? This is not the official WWYD. But so, yeah, I'll have a look. Connolly will win, as always, of course. TP says RFK Jr. is now promoting MMR vaccines. What? I don't believe that. Surely not. Surely not. Is that true? Oh, it is true. RFK Jr., the notorious vaccine skeptic, finally urges people to get measles jab after a deadly outbreak. Ah, okay. Cringewalker says, what if these stuffy old MI6 types are actually delusional and are moving around phantom battalions that simply don't exist? Yes, Cringewalker, I think that's absolutely correct. I think they are. I think they are delusional. TP says, ask Nazi death cult and their secret society vassals continue their attempts at world dictatorship. Too bad they're an elite in decline. The jig is up, Rothschild. Well, I don't know about that, TP. I don't know if that is true. They seem to be doing pretty well to me. You know, as far as I can tell, they're still winning, in my view. Sam153, again, value-free analysis tells me Israel is winning. They've got a firm ally in the White House. You know, they've got an ally in Putin as well, as I talked about earlier on. I just don't see any evidence that they're in decline. Psalm 153 says, the Dark Synth video was great cultural exposure, AA. Well, recommended. Any thoughts on synth adjacent music like electronica and electro swing, etc.? Well, I used to play electro swing to AAA when she was a baby. It was the music that got her to sleep. I will also exclusively reveal that AAA is a Dark Synth fan. And it helps her to sleep in the car. AAA, for whatever reason, likes fast and loud music. So, you know, she does some head banging in the car, and then she goes to sleep after about two or three tracks. So there we are. I kind of like 80. I like authentic 80s synth, like Depeche Mode and stuff like that. I grew up in the 90s, so I remember Big Beat and Prodigy and all that sort of stuff. I've got some time for, you know, some techno from back in the day. And I kind of, I mean, I've got more time for dubstep than I should, really. It's a bit of a gimmicky genre, dubstep, isn't it? But I kind of like some of the tracks of dubstep. Go, I like the Glitch remix. There's a Glitch remix of White Stripes, Seven Nation Army Glitch remix. That goes hard. That's a fucking awesome track. I liked Aphex Twin back in the day. I remember Window Licker when it came out. So, you know, I have very eclectic tastes, though, as befitting a man of my age and generation. Zoo says, Britain needs a timeout from the world stage. Hasn't been heard by elites. They must know something that we don't. Tiny army, no money, no public support. Well, I agree with the first two. I think they've got a tiny army and no money, but I disagree with the last part. I think they do have public support on this, unfortunately. Boggs says, what kind of car do you have, AA? I drive a Ford, Boggs. I drive a Ford. My dad worked for Ford for many, many years, so I've always driven a Ford. TP says, Nigel will be known as Nigel the Crap. Yeah, unfortunately. Blue Eagle says, is Trump working to make NATO commit to their 2% of GDP requirement for defense to reserve American spending? Well, yes, and that's working. That is the Brian Balletic theory, that all of this is smoke and mirrors and that actually Europe is just doing what Trump wants. Watch my stream from last night on the four theories, and you'll see the Balletic thesis laid out in full in that stream. Femboy Fantasia. My gosh. Well, we're welcome of all sorts here, really. Postmodern traditionalism, right? I don't think the US empire is good for Americans. Yeah, that's true, Femboy. Shaman McClamey says, Bismarck was, I'm just looking at this. Sorry, I just saw some of the chat and it made me laugh. Bismarck was a master at understanding others, actually had empathy for others. He used that empathy and understanding to outmaneuver his enemies. Yeah, I mean, Bismarck was a titan of geopolitics. Keir Starmer is not a titan of geopolitics. He is an empty suit masquerading as Churchill, though, you know. So anyway. Right. Well, speaking of Dark Synth, I'll just remind people I've extended the sale for one day just to play this for another time. It will end at midnight. So there's your last chance to get 25% off all courses, including the Shakespeare one, Trivium, and all the others. Yeah, the Mega Bundle is a great deal on the 25% off. Promo code Mandy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
Promo code Mandy. 25% off all courses. Come on down, Academic Agency. Every single course, 25% off. Promo code Mandy.
Country in which I have spent so much of my adult life and admire so much.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily fixed.